No banter. I just ate some raw cookie dough.
Ooh, nice.
Despite the fact that we're not supposed to do that as a society,
I said, screw this.
It's my birthday. I'm going to eat some raw cookie dough.
Dude, homemade or store bought?
Yeah, Kristen's making me cookies, so. Yeah.
What kind?
Chocolate chip. My favorite. Okay.
Yeah, gotta go with the classic.
You want me to make you a cake or something for your birthday? And I said, no, I would like some chocolate chip cookies. That's what we're getting.
Man, that's awesome. Like, cake is fine, but it's so hard to do. Like, it's so easy to dry out.
Yeah. And you know, yeah. And at elevation, I don't know if you guys have baked anything out there yet, but it is different at elevation. If you try to bake bread out there, it's going to be different.
Yeah, we've done a little bit of baking so far, and it's definitely like an act of constant monitoring almost.
I'll tell you what, making bread is a pain in the ass out here. You can't follow the recipe, I'll tell you that.
Have we done bread? I think my wife has done bread once, and it turned out pretty good. It was like a fun little olive loaf, but I know you have to like do math for baking at higher altitudes, because
you
like...
do, and it's not exact either. Like, I looked it up, they're like, these are things you can try at high elevation.
Yeah.
You could do this or you could do this. Don't do both of them because it will ruin everything, but do one of these things. It's like, okay,
the one that I found is like, increase the temperature by 10 to 20% or something like that, and then decrease the cooking time by like 20 to 30%. I'm like, this is too much math. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to do an SAT question to eat my dinner.
The one I saw was percentages of yeast and water. They're like, well, you could try doing slightly less yeast and see how that goes for you. If that doesn't work, put more yeast in and put more water in or something. I don't remember, but it was a pain in the ass.
If that doesn't work, just try the opposite next time. Sweet. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Cool.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, though, there's something to be said about eating raw cookie day.
It's good. I like to live on the edge, and I'll put some of that stuff down.
I love that some of the bigger companies have just completely reformulated their product, like the stuff you buy in the refrigerator aisle, to just say, like, eat this crap raw. You're a disgusting human. We've changed it for you so you don't get sick.
I know. You can, like, buy edible cookie dough, they call it. Like, all cookie dough is edible, folks. You just got to take the salmonella risk into the equation. But it's all edible.
Yeah, just moderation is key. Oh, man. Would you say chocolate chip cookie dough is, like, your favorite raw cookie dough?
No. Mm. Let me throw a curveball at you. I think my favorite is probably oatmeal raw. I know that's weird, but I like oatmeal cookie dough.
Man, I was thinking butterscotch oatmeal cookie dough might be my favorite, so I feel you.
Mm-hmm. I like oatmeal raisin, but I don't necessarily want the raisins when I'm eating raw cookie dough. They can only be in the cookie, but...
Once they're all melted in.
Mm-hmm. I can smell them right now. She's baking them right now. It smells delicious.
Oh, man.
Let's wrap this up.
What an incredible smell. Yeah.
I got cookies to eat.
Shortest episode yet.
Yep.
All right, let's see how I can pull this one off.
Pull it off.
Recorded in the old apartment. 42 eps from the start. Crooked headphones, crooked mic, narrow laneway filled with crooks. This is where we used to pod. Why discuss so many songs? Why are the eps now so long? Why did we have to break it? We only came here to talk. This is where we used to live.
That is one of my favorite Bare Naked Ladies songs.
Dude, it is a fantastic song.
I love it. I love it. The Old Apartment. Man, that's a great tune.
Dude, it's got so much just gusto to it.
It does. This is where we used to live.
It just like takes me back to a time and place. You know, one of those transportive songs.
Hey, episode 42. That is Jackie Robinson's number, and it has been retired by every Major League Baseball team. That's what I always think of when I see the number 42.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, so I thought of Jackie Robinson. I almost thought of looking up a song with his name in it and then forgot. That's so cool that the entire league has retired his.
If you ever look out at like different stadiums where they have their retired numbers, there's always a 42 there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
I wonder what year they did that, and I wonder if, like, some bum wore 42 at some point.
I also wonder if everyone got on board at the same time, or if there were people that were like, we'll do it later.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting.
No, anyway.
Good on you, MLB.
Yeah, 42. Anytime I see 42, I think Jackie.
Sweet. Yeah, so this is episode 42 of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
So how do you feel about the Bare Naked Ladies in general?
Big fan. Canada's greatest gift to the world outside of Rush, ice hockey, and that's really it. That's my order. I would go Rush, ice hockey, and the Bare Naked Ladies. Thank you, Canada.
I might put Fucked Up in a tie with Bare Naked Ladies.
Ooh, yes. I do enjoy Fucked Up a lot.
But, dude, yeah, I'm a sucker for Bare Naked Ladies. Just a blast.
I mean, Sum 41, too. If we're going to talk Canada. Yeah,
there we go. Mm. Nardwuarth, he's my boy.
Bachman Turner Overdrive. They were good.
Dude, that album was...
It was a ripper, dude. All right.
Okay, mate. What's in the queue for this week?
We're going across the pond. The theme this week are albums that were recorded in London. Foggy London Town is where these were recorded. We got a little bit of variety, and I kind of fudged the theme a little bit on one of them, but I had to because I had no other options.
Nice. Yeah, this week brought to you by Vegemite and eating beans on toast.
Is it Vegemite Australia, or do they do that in the UK too?
Which one's is Marmite?
I don't know. They're all British salty spread that are kind of dark and gross. I don't know.
Oh, you're right. Vegemite is Australian. Marmite is the Brit. Yeah. That's all the same.
Absolutely beans on toast. Actually, beans on everything. Beans for breakfast, no doubt, over there in the UK.
Oh, for sure. I'll tell you, man. I don't know if you've ever eaten a bean toasty, but...
They good?
They ain't bad. Put a little bad cheese in it.
I'm not opposed to it. I mean, the UK is not exactly known for stellar cuisine, but I'm always up for something hearty. Throw some beans at me, some sausages or something. I'm down.
Oh, for sure. I think they put all their effort into their weekly roast in the rest of the week. Oh, man. I have British friends who listen to this. This is going to be good for them.
I bet they got stuff. I'm not bagging on it. I'm just saying I can't think of anything off the top of my head other than beans and toast.
Have you ever been to World Market?
No. Where is that?
It's import type store that has like food and like things from like made around the world. Their food section has like imported snacks and kind of sauces and different things and like drinks from around the world. Uh-huh. And the one in Columbia, South Carolina, the end cap was all kinds of different Heinz beans from the UK.
Ooh.
They have a lot of beans.
They got a variety of beans over there.
Dude, I thought the U.S. had a lot of canned beans.
They took it to another level, huh?
No, oh, man.
That's like Japan with Kit Kats. You ever seen, like, the Japanese Kit Kat varieties? There's so many. There are hundreds.
I would love to know the story of how that became a thing there.
Some about the actual phrase Kit Kat is similar to, like, luck or good luck or something in Japanese, and so like they give it to people on their birthday or graduation or something, I think is what it is.
Oh, nice. Okay
maybe.
Yeah, that's
that
might
be something I heard on the internet. I don't know.
I believe it. Sounds like it should be real. So yeah, how'd you feel about this week?
Oh, good. It was a good week, man. I like the variety, so there was a little bit of variety. I think it's funny that we have one artist who was on three of these albums. When I'm saying there was a lot of variety, but still, I do think it was a good mix, good cross-section of stuff.
Yeah, this week, I mean, there was one that I positively did not like. There was one that was pretty good, or two that were pretty good, and then three that just smoked, I thought.
Ooh, okay, three smokers. I'm down. I went with chronological for the order this week, just because it made sense to my brain, so... Let's kick it off with the oldest and one of my favorite albums of all time. It is the Beatles' sixth studio album, Rubber Soul. Time frame on this is interesting. Actually, a couple of these I was like, really? That's quick. So this was recorded in October and November of 1965. Then it was released in December of 1965. So like a month.
Okay.
Recorded at EMI in London. Released on Parlophone in the UK and I believe Capitol in the US.
Okay. So this was recorded in 1 month.
Yes, 1 month and then Jeez. Released a month after that.
Jeez.
And they had just returned from a tour of the U.S., so that's why part of this kind of feels like it's maybe influenced by American soul and kind of folk music a little bit. At least that's one thing that sticks out to me on this one.
It is a very different sounding album, I feel
For
like.
The Beatles, anyway. Yeah. I mean, so massively influential. This thing is many, many times platinum. How do you feel about Rubber Soul?
So it's probably my favorite Beatles album. If not, I mean, my top three kind of rotates, but it's definitely in that rotation of very tight top three. It's bittersweet because this is our last Beatles album.
Yeah, it's either this or Revolver, which came out right after this. So I think that's a good 1-2 for you, at least as far as my favorites goes. But yeah, I mean, this one's, like you said, very different from the last Beatles album we listened to, which is way earlier. What was that? That wasn't Help, was it? What was the one we just did not too long ago?
Well, we just did Let It Be, but then before that we did Meet the Beatles.
Meet the Beatles. Yeah, so totally different from both of those, actually. This is kind of the sweet spot for Beatles, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
So jumping back into this thing after, I don't know when the last time you listened to it. It's been a while for me, at least. I was... Super excited to get into it. I didn't realize that the British version and the American version were different, but I guess I should have expected that because that's the way it is with a lot of these Beatles albums.
Everything from the 60s, if it came from the UK band, the US version was different.
Yeah. Still good, though. I mean, I like... So tell me, what do you like about Rubber Soul?
I mean, it's very experimental. Like, you can see where they're heading, but they're also kind of hanging on to that... last of their sound. Yeah, I just think it's a very well executed album.
I think, and I did a little research into this, I think we're starting to get drug Beatles at this point.
Like, yeah.
Noticeably drug influenced Beatles. LSD, marijuana. It's like, these are the drug Beatle era. And I'm not going to say it improved their sound, but it just changed it in a way that's pretty noticeable.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I could talk about probably everything on here.
Oh, yeah, me too. Every song is pretty outstanding, minus a couple that are still really good. So, I mean, what are your top tracks then?
Oh, man. Norwegian Wood, You Won't See Me, Think for Yourself, Michelle on the side A.
I like, always have liked, and actually I'm just going to face the lead off track. It's great. Kind of a sweet little country shuffle. That one originally was on the UK version of Help. So on the U.S. version, they were like, let's just stick this on the U.S. Rubber Soul because it was previously released in the U.K. on Helps, never been in the U.S. So this is the first appearance in the U.S.
All right. Fair enough.
Norwegian Wood is great. I loved it. It's really weird. Heavily featuring the sitar. The only thing I can't say I support is the arson at the end of the song, but the rest of it's great. Like, he burns down a house.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it gets violent very quickly.
Yeah. Takes a turn.
Maybe that's what influenced the black metal arsons of the 80s and 90s.
Norwegian Wood. Apparently it was like, I read this, the Norwegian Wood wasn't actually about a place in Norway. It was about cheap wood paneling that was super popular in the UK during the mid-60s, like for like the walls and stuff. So that's what I was actually referencing.
Oh, fair enough. That's a bummer. But
yeah, I thought they were actually in Norway hanging out, but no, it's just...
Yeah, like, clearly they're looking to get more experimental. I mean, it was a risk to balance like this, but they were on the forefront of psychedelic music for sure.
Absolutely. The next two, I mean, You Won't See Me is a more standard track, but Paul's bass line on that is absolutely terrific. It's kind of generic outside the bass line, but it's phenomenal. Think for Yourself is a George Harrison tune. That one is really cool. It's interesting, though. That's a George Harrison tune, but like the lead guitar sounding part is actually Paul McCartney on the bass.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're using like a fuzz box on his bass, if you can kind of picture that. That's Paul.
Dang. I actually wrote about how I really like the lead guitar and how sinister it sounded.
It's Paul. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a fuzz box on his bass, and there's actually two Pauls. So they overdubbed that with his regular bass playing. It's cool.
Dang.
Distorted. Okay. Let's see. Either you said Michelle. Michelle is awesome. Just a sweet little bluesy love ballad.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it should have been in like an early 1960s European noir. It's just delightful, kind of melancholic though.
Yeah, George Harrison's little guitar picking solo is really cool on that one, and some sweet harmonies from the boys. Let's see, B-side. I can talk about everything, so what's your top tracks here?
Man.
I got one that...
Dude, the B-side slays. Like
it does. They both do.
Yeah. It's Only Love. I'm Looking Through You in My Life. Wait. Like, yeah.
I'm Looking Through You, the ninth track, third track on the B-side. That's going to be my song of the week. Like, that doesn't always jump to the forefront when you're like, hey, Jay, mm-hmm. what's your favorite Beatles song? That's not one that pops into my head, but every time I hear it, I'm just like, wow, this is such a yes. cool little bluesy thing.
So this was very, very close to being my song of the week. I love this song. Like, it's folk, it's psychedelic, it's kind of country. Like, even a little Monkees influence or sound in there.
Yeah, the cool little organ honks before the chorus comes in. Bump, bump, da-da-da-da, bump, bump. Like, super cool guitar work, great vocals. It's a fantastic song. It's got to be my song of the week.
Man, the like, snarling delivery at the end of each verse.
You are the same. Bump, bump, da-da-da-da, bump, bump, da-da-da-da. Like, awesome. And it, like I said, it never jumps to the front of my mind when someone's like, hey, what's a good Beatles song? But that's got to be one of my favorites. In My Life is cool little Baroque pop piece. Mm-hmm. What I always thought was a harpsichord on that is not. It's a piano. It's Ooh. George. Yeah, it's George Martin playing the piano, and then they sped the audio up a little bit to make it have that kind of that. I don't even know how to explain the harpsichord sound, but you know what I'm talking about.
Kind of like almost tinny.
Yes. So yeah, exactly. So that's how they did it. Another great song.
Always impressive. Yeah, and then Wait, like, the tambourines are right here immediately. The chorus is just such a big-time smash. It just gets me moving and shaking.
Ringo stands out to me on that one. That's a good, like, a good little Ringo shuffle going on in the drums. Mm-hmm. And again, Paul's bass lines are always fantastic. I love Paul McCartney bass lines, so it's always going to get me hooked. I mean, we can end with that, because Run For Your Life is not my favorite Beatles song. That's probably the worst track on here, and it's really not bad at all, but it's just my least favorite one.
Yeah, even John Lennon eventually said he hated it, so.
I mean, lyrically, he's kind of he's very much obviously threatening ex-lover and her current lover. It's like, I hope it's tongue-in-cheek, but with John Lennon, I almost feel like it's not.
Cause... Yeah, I think that's why he disavowed it, is maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, so... Let's just cut to the chase. We can't really say much more about this thing. This album is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
Absolutely. Kind of a classic cover, too. I like.
Oh, yeah.
Shot at a weird angle. It's all four of their heads and then just Rubber Soul up in the upper left.
They have so many good album covers. It's just stupid.
Yeah, Revolver's cool, too, the one after that. All right. Whipped through a phenomenal album. Let's talk about another one. Next up... on our trip through London here is our second Uriah Heep album of the podcast. This is The Magician's Birthday, the fifth album from Uriah Heep. It was recorded at Lansdowne Studios in London in September and October of 1972, and then released in November on Bronze Records in the UK and Mercury in the US. I have the Mercury version, but I do have the original pressing.
Oh, dang. Okay, nice. Yeah, what'd you think of this?
It was weird as hell, but I enjoyed it. Very weird, though.
The first thing I thought was, okay, with a title like this, you know what you're in store for. I honestly couldn't remember much of the first one we listened to, and I kind of felt like I didn't care much for the first one. Like, I thought it was fine, but it didn't jump out to me. I wasn't sure what to expect based on that. But, dude, I thought this thing was awesome.
I love it. I thought I remember the first one being pretty heavy and enjoying it because of that. But it has been a while. And I also really enjoyed this one. Speaking of cool covers, did you happen to look at the cover of this thing?
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely wild.
It's a fever dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a naked dude standing on top of a rock with a magic wand. And then like fairies and mushrooms and like a demon and a cat. A lot going on here.
You know what you're getting, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, 1972, we're getting a little weird. So yeah. I said the Beatles album sounded kind of drug influence. I mean, this cover is certainly drug influence. But jumping into it, you said you really enjoyed this one. So I did too. What stood out to you about it?
I mean, the album opener is phenomenal. It's my song of the week, Sunrise.
Hell yeah. Apparently that one's huge at live shows. Like the crowd really got into seeing that one played live, and I can see why. It's heavy and cool.
Dude, exactly. Like, I listened to the intro several times, just scrubbing back. There's kind of that like creeping moog and then just like monstrous whale. Like,
yes.
I love it.
Like the big organ and then like the choral just like to open it up. And it's just the organ throughout this whole album is pretty sweet.
Man, it's an explosion. Like, it's kind of Jethro Tull. It's kind of Zeppelin. It's just ridiculously, it's loud and it's heavy. And man, everything about this was just awesome.
Yeah. Great opener. Absolutely phenomenal opener. You got anything on the next couple of tracks? Spider-Woman?
I mean, Spider-Woman's kind of a classic psych rocker, but I loved every second of it. The bass was insane.
I agree. That was when I was trying to figure out what the song was about and just couldn't. Like, the titular Spider-Woman, it's like, I think she's good because she's like helping him out or something. Yeah. But it made me think of like the Lord of the Rings when they're going up to Shelob's lair, the Pass of the Spider. Like, but apparently she's good to him. That was one of the lyrics. How about the next couple?
I really liked Echoes in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like traveling through a space portal. It was a prog song through and through, but...
Mm-hmm.
It was also operatic and grandiose, and that was cool with me.
Yeah, that was the one, if I remember, it had a long, extended instrumental kind of intro with the like piano and the synth. And then there was like a vocal piano duet for a little bit. And then, yeah, just a cool, big symphonic song. A lot of different parts, some big percussion, kind of sci-fi feeling. Like you said, it's... very prog feeling. And actually, the one before Blind Eye was kind of a prog tune as well.
Oh, for sure. Flipping to the B-side.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have much on the last one on the A-side. It was cool. Rain, but it was...
Yeah.
Whatever.
A little conventional, but fine, yeah.
Sweet Lorraine, though, kicks off the B-side, and that one comes screaming in. I was digging Sweet Lorraine.
Yeah, that one, again, like, kind of floating in neon space, got that cop show Waka Waka.
Uh-huh.
Man, like, the drumming was wicked. This is a weird comparison, but I was like, if CCR ever did a prog tune, it would sound like this.
The Waka Chicka guitars, I got that in my notes. Absolutely. I gotta say, though, you didn't mention it, and I don't, you know, because there was so much going on in this song, and I don't blame you, but the Gary Thane's bass playing was really cool on this song. Really cool.
They were in the zone for everything.
Mm-hmm. How about, okay, Tails? Anything on Tails? Because I want to talk about the last song. So,
yeah, I don't have much on Tails. Yeah, let's get into the, is it the Magician's Birthday, the last one?
Yeah, Tails was like sci-fi medieval minstrels, and that's pretty much all I had to say on it. But the Magician's Birthday, dude, what did you think of that one? That's the longest track on here.
I thought everything about it was insanity and so ahead of its time. And I couldn't get enough of it.
It's 10 minutes of weird wizard shit, and it's absolutely awesome. Like, they're all pumped up because they're going to the magician's birthday party. It's in the forest. It's not so far away. Yeah. And then they actually sing happy birthday to the magician at one point, and then they just get real weird with it. It's, man, it's a cool tune.
It's the pinnacle of, like, stoner occult metal. Like, yes. We've got... kazoos, we've got a carnival atmosphere, we've got like almost 1980s virtuosic, like Iggy Mammalstein shredding, like Animal is on the drums, like horror film piano. It's nuts.
It's bonkers. Like, that was the note that I had, just the word bonkers. Like, it's really heavy. I cranked it. When that song came on, I was like, all right, this is the title track. I'm going to see what this has to offer. I'm turning my stereo up, and I'm glad I did, because it was a wild ride.
I loved it. I just couldn't get enough.
So, final thoughts here. I'm assuming this is one of the three that you said you really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, this might even be my album of the week. Not 100% positive. Tough choice this week, but I was reading the reviews of this, and some guy said this was inaccessible, and I'm like, yeah, that's what makes it so freaking great,
dude. Me, like, exactly, that was my whole thought. It's like, the weirdness is what makes this cool to me. It's it's not so weird that it's unlistenable. It's not Camel, but it is weird enough that it's like, okay, there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on here. All right, way to go, Uriah Heep. That was solid. I think both of Uriah Heep albums, I'm glad I own them. Both of them were magical, because the other one we used on a magic theme too. I think it was called Demons and Wizards, if I remember.
It was,
correctly. Yeah. All right, wild. Okay, so what'd I say? That one came out November 1st, 1972. This next one came out 2 weeks later. So,
oh my gosh, okay.
Yeah, bang, bang. So third album up this week is No Secrets. It's the third studio album by Carly Simon, who is American, but this was recorded at Trident Studios in London and released November 16, 1972 on Elektra. Yeah, we've done a fair amount of Carly Simon. I think we did a Greatest Hits and we did one of her other albums. So I've heard a lot of these already, but let's talk about it. What'd you think jumping into this one?
Well, first off, like, going from Uriah Heep to Carly Simon, I don't know if we've ever had like two... It's just completely different experiences back to back like this. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a fine album.
Did you happen to listen to him in that order?
Because that'd be hilarious. No, oh my God. Yes, I did. I actually went from Carly Simon to Uriah Heep. Now that I think about it. Yeah.
Huh. So you turned up the heat a little bit.
Yeah.
Uriah. I mean, so this is a totally fine album. Full disclosure, I was not in the mood to listen to this kind of music when I listened to this. So my notes are sort of slim, but I enjoyed it. I have no complaints about it, but I just wasn't like over the top in the mood for it. So let's jump into it. What's jumping out to you on the A side?
The Carter Family, I thought, was just an interesting song that I'd like to know the story behind. You're So Vain, ever since you mentioned Mick Jagger, that's all I can hear in the background.
Mm-hmm. I did a little more digging on that. Apparently, he randomly called the studio. It was like, hey, what's going on? And Carly was like, hey, come down and sing some backup vocals on the song. And he did. He just showed up. I was like, hey, here we go.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me like the song more, even though I hate it.
You're not a fan of You're So Vain. I think it's okay. Nah. I think it's a decent song. I don't care about, like, there's a whole thing about who's it about.
Yeah, the mythology.
Who gives a shit? I don't care. I think it's a good song regardless, myself.
Dude, that's why I hate it. I'm like, don't give one single solitary fuck about who this is about. But
yeah, dude, some douchey guy. Who cares? Yeah. Like, he sounds like a turd to me.
Yeah. Why do we want to know this person? Like,
Yeah. But I like it. Strings are good. Piano's good. Like you mentioned, Carter Family, though, the track before that, that was an interesting song. Like, it's a song about not knowing that you're going to miss somebody until they're gone.
Yeah.
And it's three different phases. Like, she's talking about a little kid she grew up when they moved away. She didn't realize it until later on she got sad. Then it's her granny dying. Then it's a lover leaving. A little racy in the third verse. Kicks off with, "You used to make me moan in bed, but that isn't enough." So, not bad, though. Carter Family was cool. How about No Secrets, the last one on the A side? I like No Secrets.
For sure, yeah. So, this was another one from the greatest hits, but...
Mm-hmm. The best
stuff. Yeah, something about that opening strum. It was a dang good song. I don't really remember it on the best of, but in this environment, it stood out a lot more.
You know, it's funny you say that. I did remember it from the best of, but I agree with you. Like, this was easily my favorite track on the A side. Mm-hmm. I like the little bass line. The instrumentation's cool with kind of some subtle strings and woodwinds in there. Our vocal delivery's cool. Yeah, I like that one a lot. How about the B side?
B side I thought was a lot stronger. I really liked Embrace You Child, Waited So Long, and Night Owl.
Embrace Me, You Child, man. When the chorus hits on that one, it is really cool. Soaring and soulful. Great piano. Good strings. Again, whoever, I should have looked this up, man. Whoever arranged the string instrumentations on this album, there were a couple guys, actually. Paul Buckmaster and Kirby Johnson. The strings on this whole album are pretty cool. They're subtle, but they're good.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, it's kind of a weird and dark song, yet also beautiful and sunny. It's like a little Petula Clark vibes.
Yeah.
It's a nice one.
What were the other ones you mentioned?
Waited So Long. So I looked at the credits for this one, and Nicky Hopkins is on the piano, and dude is just like the master of, or was the master of, like, studio piano. Like, he worked with the Kinks, the Who, the Rolling Stones on one of my favorite Rolling Stones songs. Like, just an awesome song.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mention that, because if you actually look at the personnel on this album, it's rolling deep. Like from the liner notes, there's at least 1, 2, 3. I mean, there's 20 people listed that participated in this album in some way or another. Which brings me to track number 9, Night Owl. I don't know if you have any notes on this, but this is a James Taylor song. It's a cover of a James Taylor song. James Taylor and Carly Simon were dating at the time. They were eventually married. But this is kind of a funkier, bluesier version of James Taylor's folk song. And this is the one that features Paul and Linda McCartney on backup vocals. Yes.
Okay. Wow. I was wondering when Paul would appear. I knew that was the musician. I just had no idea where else.
So Paul and Linda both providing backup vocals as well as Bonnie Bramlett on that one.
Oh, man. I love Bonnie Bramlett.
Night Owl was a cool track. Yeah, I liked Night Owl a lot. It's kind of a funky thing, a little saxophone in there, a little more up-tempo than a lot of the rest of it. And, I mean, Carly kind of rips up the vocals. They're kind of a growling, cool vocals. That was a fun track.
Yeah, so you got any other final thoughts?
I mean, final thoughts, like I said, I enjoyed it. Not something I'll probably revisit very often because I'm not often in the mood for this style of music, but it was pretty good. There was nothing bad about it at all.
Yeah, very understandable. I'm with you. I thought it was fine. I thought the B-side was very strong.
Another one I'm not 100% sure where it came from, by the way. I think it was a record option pickup for like a buck or two.
But okay.
And so was Uriah Heep. I know that for sure.
Man, that's a freaking steal.
And the Beatles I paid $5 for, also at the record option. I think all three of these came from the record option that I go to. Probably paid a total of 10 bucks for all three of them.
Dang. Nice little affordable week.
I'm telling you, man, at some point, if you can make it to that, it's in Lawrence, Kansas. We should go. It's awesome. But it's a free-for-all. It's a madhouse. But it's
what
fun.
Time of year is it?
I think they do it in the spring, if I remember right.
Okay. I might have to book a trip. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Bring a crate or a big bag or something, because you're going to be snatching stuff for $2-3. All right. This next one also came from the same place. The next album up is Band on the Run. This is the third album from Paul McCartney and Wings. Came out in December of 1973. This one is the one I fudged it a little bit. So this album was actually mostly recorded in Lagos, Nigeria. Paul wanted to make an album in kind of an exotic location in his mind, so he asked EMI, where are all of your studios across the world, and then pick this one.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
I wonder what the options were. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I would be curious too. Really wasn't that great of an experience for them. It was, there was a coup that happened somewhat soon after this, or before this. So the military was in charge. At one point, they got robbed at knife point, and the thief got off with a lot of their demo tapes. So some of these, the original versions of a lot of these songs were actually stolen.
Oh, dang. I wonder if they're still, like, floating around.
Yeah, I don't know. I on one of them, we'll talk about it, but he kind of pieced it together because the original tape was stolen, so he had to kind of figure out how to play it from memory. Anyway, did you happen to look at the cover of this?
I did, but it didn't really stand out.
It doesn't stand out, but until you get to looking at who's on the cover. So it's the band. It's Paul and Linda and a fellow named Danny Lane. That's all that was that's the entire composition of Wings at this point, because right before they went to Nigeria to record this, the bass player and the drummer quit. So like literally the bass player quit the night before they left. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, Wings in Lagos was just Paul McCartney, Linda McCartney, and Denny Lane. But anyway, the cover is those three plus famous people from around the world. So you've got James Coburn on here. You've got famous boxer at the time, some newscasters, and our pal Christopher Lee is on this album cover, looking very Dracula-y.
Is that him?
On the right.
The right? Oh my God.
Yeah, in the back row, second from the right. That's Christopher Lee. Good old Saruman. Yeah, Lord Summerisle, Francisco Scaramanga, Dracula. He's doing it all right now.
The heavy metal god.
Dude, he played Dracula so many times. How many times, if you're going to guess, how many times he's credited in feature films for playing Dracula? Take a guess.
Four.
Oh, way more.
Really?
11 times, dude. He's played Dracula 11 times.
Hey, when you're good at something.
Man, RIP, what a cool dude. Christopher Lee might be one of the coolest human beings ever to live, by the way. I don't know if you ever looked into him, but he's a really cool dude.
Yeah, I love his history with metal music.
Yeah. Interesting guy. Interesting guy. Lord Summerisle. Anyway. All right. So jumping into this, largely recorded in, like I said, Lagos, but they did do some of it in AIR Studios London, including a couple of complete songs. So I figured I could use it for this theme. Jumping into Wings here. What'd you think?
I was a big fan of the TV show, so I was looking forward to this.
The Hackett Brothers.
Dude, I love that show so freaking much.
Me too.
Really? I thought it was fine. God love Paul for his Beatles work, but man, this is quintessential Paul's granny music a lot of times.
It is very Paul. I'll admit that. Yeah. This is a very Paul album, but full disclosure, I'm a Paul fan. I like when Paul's being Paul. You know, for the title track, Band on the Run, just a cool, like, three different melodies. It's like a tri-melody tune. Three different sections. A little bit of a tribute to his former bandmates, because they were they had just gotten out of a kind of a bad contract with Apple. So it was kind of a tribute to them, but kind of a funky middle section, a little bit of a country tune. Very Paul though.
Yeah, it's got neat movements and pieces to it. I feel like he was trying a little hard to channel his inner David Bowie, but it's a good leadoff track.
Yeah, I do like this, you know, three different kind of sections. One of them is almost country western, the third one. But anyway, next one up is Jet. I love Jet. I don't know if you like Jet or not, but I love Jet.
Yeah, so I actually did kind of love this song because it's a little glam, kind of synth heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Linda on the synth playing. Ooh. So there's that one bass note that's just like, that just like holds the single note when they're going into the verses. That's just Linda on the synth. Little sax in there. I even love the shout of Jet. Like, I think it's a great track. And it's actually named after his dog. He had a dog named Jet.
Hell yeah to this one.
Yeah, I always thought it was about an actual jet or like going somewhere, but nah, it's about a dog. I don't have many notes on Bluebird, but there's one fun fact I need to relay. So, and Jet, the one we just talked about, that was one of the ones that was recorded entirely in London. So was the next one, Bluebird. That one
sucked.
It wasn't great. Sort of a calypso track. But the thing I found interesting, so that one was also recorded in London. And the percussion on that one was provided by a gentleman named Remy Kabaka, who is Nigerian and from Lagos, who just happened to be in London at the time. And they were just like, hey, come do the percussion for this. So he did. So interesting.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Sax solo was kind of cool in that one, too. Let's see. Either of the last two on the A side, then?
Mrs. Vanderbilt, not really. Let Me Roll It had one of the most ridiculous lyrics I think we've heard so far.
I love Let Me Roll It. Let me just say that. Like, Mrs. Vanderbilt's cool. It's another cool sax part in that one. But Let Me Roll It, I freaking love Let Me Roll It. Like, the echo effect on his vocals, the kind of bluesy bass line. There's a great guitar riff in there, some subtle keys. What was the lyric that you enjoyed on that one?
My heart is like a wheel, let me roll it to you.
I can't tell you how I feel. My heart is like a wheel, let me roll it. Let me roll it to you.
It felt like a modernized version of a classic Beatles track almost. The drums are really cool in it, but
yeah, I love the kind of oddly timed drum beats right before the little guitar riff. Like they're right before it goes into it the first time, there's two real quick succession drum beats, and then All right, B-side, what do you got?
No Words I actually liked quite a lot. And I think the strings and horns and falsetto just kind of ratcheted it up to the next level.
That's the only non-McCartney writing credit on here. That's the guitarist Denny Lane got a writing credit on that one, too. Do you know he was in the Moody Blues before this? So before Wings, Lane's a Moody Blues guitarist. But yeah, I like that one a lot. Apparently a couple roadies provided backup vocals for that, but they buried them in the mix, so you can't really hear them. I just think it's interesting there. Hey, guys, come sing backup vocals on this.
Oh, crap, we made a mistake. Phase those guys out.
Track 8 is Hell in Wheels, which they just tossed onto the U.S. version for some reason of this album. It's not on the U.K. version. It was released as a single, and then there was a record exec in the U.S. was like, hey, put that on there, because that's really good. So it's only on the U.S. version. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun tune. It kind of cooks. It's about a... They named their Land Rover Hell in Wheels. That's what it's about. All right, so how about the last two? Picasso's last words, Drink to Me?
Nah, not really.
I got a story on that. Can I tell you my quick story?
Yeah.
Okay, so apparently Paul and Linda were hanging out in Jamaica. And in Paul's words, he snuck onto a movie set that was filming there. He met Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. So they're hanging out afterwards, having some drinks and dinner. And Dustin Hoffman and Paul are talking about writing songs. And Paul says, I can write a song about anything. So Hoffman whips out a magazine and pulls out a story about Pablo Picasso's last words, which were Drink to Me.
Okay.
And Paul, on the spot, came up with this song, which I think is really interesting.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, like so random. Just star-studded. Okay.
Yeah. There was a little percussion sound in the back of this one. And what that sound was is Ginger Baker banging on a tin can full of gravel at his own. Yes. So apparently Ginger Baker also had a studio in Nigeria, and he invited him over one day. And Paul was super hesitant to go, but showed up, and they laid this track down at Ginger Baker's studio.
Dang. Just intertwining with all kinds of.
Anything on the last track then, 1985?
It had some gross island vibes to it, but it also had like some cool proto new wave and dancey stuff that was pretty cool.
I thought it was, yeah, like maybe almost a borderline disco tune, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, it reminded me a lot of electropop from the late aughts, early teens, like LaRue and people like that.
I thought it was a decent one to go out on anyway. The big orchestral outro was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So on the whole, what'd you think of the Band on the Run?
So first off, I just so happened to catch Robert Christgau's review, and I don't think that guy liked anything. Like, this was a whatever album for me, but that dude hates everything.
He hates everything.
Dude, he sucks.
Every time I see Robert Christgau, I'm just like, oh yeah, he's gonna shit on this album, whatever it is. Yeah. He always does.
Yeah, you can bet on it. Finally, I can't believe Love Take Me Down to the Streets wasn't on this album.
That's a great Wings song.
Definitely one of the best.
Oh, man. That's one of my favorite gags of any film. Like, I love that multiple people acknowledge the fact that it's a real Wings song, and they're just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I love that there was a band who actually made it, and it sounds pretty dang good. Yeah, about you?
Hilarious. I can't top that. I mean, that's got to be like our third or fourth reference to that movie. That's Role Models, right?
Yeah.
Love,
Take Me Down to the
Streets. To the Streets. Yeah. That's a hilarious movie. Go see Role Models if you haven't, people. What are you doing? All right. Let's roll into the fifth one this week. Holy moly, we're flying, baby. We're flying. Excellent. All right, we're talking about Thin Lizzy's sixth studio album. We've got Jailbreak. Jailbreak was recorded at Rampart Studios in London and released on March 26, 1976. This was Thin Lizzy's big breakthrough in the U.S. This is the only one that really got any traction over here stateside.
Mm. Huh. Okay. That's a little surprising to me.
Yeah. Fighting, we've already done Fighting. Fighting's a great album. I thought that maybe got something over here, but nah.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to say, I don't think we're telling any tales out of school by saying we both really enjoyed Fighting. I thought this was as good.
Oh, yeah. I love this album. This is a solid album. So real quick, on the inside sleeve, there's an advertisement from the record label telling me all of the artists they have on the label, and it's offering me to purchase a copy of Uriah Heep's Magician's Birthday on the inside label. So I thought that was interesting.
That's who else is on there? Any other big standouts?
Oh, hilariously, it just says, so it's got a bunch of, like, it'll say the band and then the name of the album that they have. But hilariously, it says just the word Rush on here, with doesn't list their albums because they have so many albums.
That's awesome.
But we've got, let's see, Bachman Turner Overdrive 2.
Ooh, okay.
We've got Kraftwerk Autobahn.
Ooh, nice.
For sale from Mercury. Rush just says the word Rush.
Okay.
A couple of Rod Stewart's, the other Thin Lizzy, three Uriah Heeps.
Dang, Rod Stewart? Man.
Yeah. Then it gets into like what they have on their pop label and the country label, the jazz label.
That's awesome.
I don't
awesome.
Know any of those. Country, I do. Tom T. Hall's on here.
Okay, sweet, sweet.
Yep, Charlie Lewis, or Charlie Rich, Jerry Lee Lewis. Bleh. Yeah, interesting.
Nice. Yeah, right on.
Anyway, back to the Jailbreak. On the back of this, there is a whole long-ass sci-fi story about a place called Dimension 5 that is in the hands of somebody called the Overmaster, who is imprisoning large quantities of his population without cause. And the titular Jailbreak is a bunch of people trying to get out of his prisons.
Wait, this is a concept album?
I don't know. I think it's just the first album. Excuse me, the first song on here is part of this concept, but it's...
I don't know, man.
It tells the whole story on the back.
That's wild. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Apparently only four people escape the Jailbreak. Four men manage to escape and start a pirate radio station broadcasting these messages of rebellion. So,
okay.
Maybe a little bit of a concept, yeah.
Sweet.
But as far as a leadoff track goes, I think it's tough to get any better than Jailbreak.
Dude. It's a fantastic rock and roll song. I feel like we've talked about quite a few of those recently, but dang.
Yeah.
Crank it up, man.
Just starts off. Whang, bump, 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 bump. Like, perfect. Great little rock song, man. It starts out with just that guitar squeal that just naturally fades out into the main riff. Super cool. It's fun.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Just like blow out my hearing. I don't care.
Lyrically, it's fun too. I mean, tonight there's going to be trouble. Some of us won't survive. See, the boys of me mean business. We're busting out dead or alive. Like, it's just a fun tune.
Oh yeah,
that's honestly how I would describe this whole album. It's fun. It's it's heavy and it rocks, but it's just kind of fun.
Dude, such a good time.
What else you got on here? Any of the other tracks on the A side stand out to you?
I have a note about Angel from the Coast, which I really liked. I just felt like you would really appreciate the bass on that.
I did, and I commented it's a little bit... It's really interesting, because I had two totally different notes on that, and I think they're both appropriate. Like, kind of a Southern rock vibe from it, but also maybe musically a little Rush in there, and some of that is the bass line, like you said.
It was a weird collision of worlds.
Yeah. Pretty solid. I don't really have any notes on Running Back. It's a song about Edger and James. Ha, just kidding. Remember him for the Colts? He's in the Hall of Fame.
Is he?
Yeah. Hell nice. Yeah.
Good for him. Good for you, EJ.
The Edge, man. Just kidding. It's not about him. It's about running back to an ex-lover. Some sweet little guitar playing. That's the one thing that I love about Thin Lizzy is they've got the dual lead guitars. Two guys just ripping it up on the lead guitars.
Oh, yeah. It's another blast of a track. Like, got some claps. It's stupid catchy.
How about the other two on the A side?
Warriors, really heavy song, both lyrically and musically. Tasty guitar solos, massive drums, though.
Absolutely. There were one part of it that was too Kiss-like for me, and I was like, man, no, this sounds like Kiss. But then the guitar solo hits, and it is sick as hell. Like, very metal.
Dude, one of my final notes is Thin Lizzy is the band Kiss wishes they were.
Correct. Exactly. Yes. And because it's actually good. All right. So B-side then kicks off with the song by Thin Lizzy, everyone knows, Boys Are Back in Town.
Yeah.
I was going to say, man, it's easy to see why that one got the most traction for them. Like, really cool twin lead guitar part on that. They're just like mirroring each other at times, and other times they're like doing their own thing. Just really cool guitar playing on that one.
I mean, how many times did I listen to this back in high school before going out with the fellas? Like, too many, but what are you going to do? It's laced with hooks.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason they used it in an Applebee's commercial, but I don't hold that against the song, man. I can't, because it's too good of a song to be like, oh, yeah, it's an Applebee's song.
And you know what, man? When you're eating good in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Me and the boys going to Applebee's to hang out, maybe start a fight, cause a little trouble, have a beer or two. Yeah, Boys Are Back, baby.
So did you happen to read about how it caught on in the U.S.?
No, actually. What do you got?
I guess they were kind of touring in the U.S., and their manager came up and was like, hey, guys, I think you all have a hit record. And they're like, oh, really? Which one? And their manager goes, the Boys Are Back in Town. And they were like, wait, what? They said it like was hardly even on their own radar. But apparently these two DJs in Louisville, Kentucky got a hold of it and just were obsessed.
I love
it. Like, pushed it so hard and played it all the time. And other stations started catching on, and
dude,
just so random.
That's kind of how Rush got their big break in the U.S. too. There was a radio station in Detroit that locked onto Working Man and just played the shit out of it, and everyone was like, holy crap, this new Led Zeppelin is awesome. And they're like, no, it's Rush, they're from Toronto, they kick ass. And they kind of blew up from there. So yeah, similar
That's
vibe.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love those kind of stories.
Yeah, it just took one person to believe, and two people in this case. But
absolutely. Let's see. I don't have much on Fight or Fall, but the last two tracks on here, I have plenty of notes. So do you have anything to say about either of them?
Cowboy song. My first note is literally Chef's Kiss.
Like, it's terrific, dude. I don't know why I love that song. I love it so much. It just like starts out as like such a mellow country song that transitions into this kind of hard driving rock song. Just really cool.
I think it is the perfect encapsulation of everything Thin Lizzy.
Absolutely. Like, it's hooky. Phil Lynott's voice is great. The dual lead guitar riffs are great. Man, this is, it's funny. I just found I have the exact same note. This is the best of Thin Lizzy to me, is what I have in my notes. So yeah, totally cool.
And what about the last one?
I fucking loved Emeralds, dude. That was a last track on here. Emeralds was a very, very close contender for Song of the Week. Just a cool, like, inspired by traditional Irish music. It uses a 6/8 weird time signature and some galloping triplets. Like, it's heavy.
Yeah, it's a true metal track.
It is. Like, it is a metal track. The guitars are chugging. That thing is smoking. I love that song. The two lead guitarists are, like, trading off badass solos. Like, wow. Dude, that was sweet. A great way to go out.
So, overall,
really solid all the way through. Like, some bits of poppier rock interspersed with some really heavy stuff. Like, a great mix of stuff. Absolutely cooks on the way out. I love Emeralds. I hadn't heard Emeralds in a while, and I was kind of surprised by it, but really cool tune.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I need to get me some dang Thin Lizzy, man.
Yeah, I agree. You pick you up a couple. All right. Hey, we're whipping through this. Let's go to the last one this week. Number 6 is the 5th studio album from Eric Clapton. It is called Slow Hand. It came out November 25th, 1977 on RSO Records and was recorded at Olympic Studios, London. Apparently, the title is Eric Clapton's nickname, which is a weird nickname for a guitarist. Because you feel like a guitarist is like really fast with their hands, but it's slow hand. And this baby was produced by our old pal Glenn Johns.
Yeah. Glenn still, I wonder what his last album was that he ever made.
He's all over this podcast, dude. He's all over this podcast. And apparently Clapton really wanted to work with him, kind of sought him out because he really liked what he had done with the Rolling Stones and the Eagles previous to this.
Glenn Johns is still alive. I mean, I don't blame Eric Clapton for seeking him out. I mean, my God, look at his track record.
No kidding. And the other part of it was like he knew how to work well with both British and American musicians. Mm. And Eric Clapton's backup band for this is an American group of dudes from the U.S. So that was the one I mentioned earlier. It's kind of a mix of people. So anyway, jumping into this one.
Wow. Sorry. Glenn Johns did a Band of Horses album a few years ago.
Holy shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, okay. That is. He's still out there. Man, if we did this podcast for another 30 years, we'd still be talking about Glenn Johns' albums. All right, so I know you're not a great big Eric Clapton fan. I'm not a fan of him as a person recently, but there are parts of this album that are very, very good. So let's talk about it. What stands out to you on the A side here?
I don't know. I mean, I've always called him Eric Crapton.
I know you're not a fan. I get it. And honestly, there are large chunks of this that are pretty damn generic sounding to me. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets all this credit for being a great guitar player, and he is, but there are parts of this that are just like, whatever.
The only song I can say that I didn't mind on side A was Next Time You See Her. But, I mean, yeah, what about you? You're going to have more on this than me.
I think it's funny that that's the one, because the first three tracks on here, like, hits, like totally hits. Mm-hmm. The first one's Cocaine, which is a JJ Cale song that they're covering. Kind of a solid groove. Guitar certainly stands out. Apparently the Argentine version of this album does not have cocaine on it because the military government said it will promote youths to start using cocaine. So
fair enough.
I mean, it's kind of formulaic, honestly. There's just like the steady groove that rolls through the whole thing.
Yeah,
it is what it is. I do enjoy the second track, Wonderful Tonight. I think it's a good song. The content's a little weird. It was written about Patty Boyd, who was George Harrison's wife. He wrote it for her when they were getting ready to go to a party at Paul and Linda McCartney's house together, Eric Clapton and Patty Boyd. And I got to looking at the timeline. I couldn't quite figure it out. Like, I almost think that Patty Boyd was still with George Harrison when this was going on.
Oh, dang.
Like, yeah, I know for sure Eric Clapton was kind of creeping around while they were together.
Of course he was.
Yeah, so.
Disgusting.
But interestingly, Patty Boyd, man, if you look at the songs that were written about her, she inspired so many tunes. Like, George Harrison songs, If I Needed Someone, Something, and For You Blue, and then the Eric Clapton songs, Layla, Bell Bottom Blues, and Wonderful Tonight. Like, those are heavy hitters. Six of them, all about her.
And the face that launched 1,000 songs.
The timeline is a little strange, but man. Yeah. Anyway, I think Wonderful Tonight's a solid track. I like Lay Down Sally, too, track 3. Kind of a country blues track.
Okay, I actually thought this was a cover because it felt so lifeless to me.
Yeah. I thought the little picking solo was cool. I don't know, I thought it was kind of a cool tune. Did you know the last one on the A side, We're All the Way, is a Don Williams song?
I did, yeah. And I'd love to know like how in the world he stumbled across Don Williams' music and how he came to cover him, and how Don Williams was probably flattered. But I mean, shout out to Don for getting some love. I'd rather not hear from Eric Clapton, but
yeah, I don't think Eric Clapton's voice is bad at all, honestly, but I'd rather hear Don Williams sing it. Mm-hmm. I'd rather hear Don Williams sing about anything because he's amazing, but all right, B-side then. Kicks off with The Chord. That was one that I remembered immediately my dad listening to when I was a little kid. I was like, oh, okay, I remember this song.
This is the one song on the album that I can say I genuinely like. It's kind of funky. It's more interesting. Marcy Levy's presence, I think, makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily age well, and it feels locked into where it is, but like the good sax comes blowing through.
That's the only reason it needed to be 8 minutes long, so they could fit that sax solo in there. The rest of it, I was like, okay, guys, it's a good song, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but it did not need to be 8 minutes long. I bet the bass player was bored as hell, because it's the same thing the entire time, just the whole time.
We still doing this? Okay.
All right, let me just stick with it. I mean, it's a good tune, but didn't need to be 8 minutes long. All right, so anything else on the B side? I don't really have many more notes here.
Nah, May You Never sounded like a bad Eagles song. Which one, though, right? No, I mean, he basically made his a career at times through being a cover artist, which, like, mean old Frisco sounded like
that is a cover, bad, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
It's a, like, Delta Blues cover of a song by Arthur Crudup.
Yeah, it sounded like Lynyrd Skynyrd trying, like, someone trying to cover Lynyrd Skynyrd covering something. It just, man, yeah.
I didn't have much to say. I mean, the last one's an instrumental, Peaches and Diesel. There was a co-writing credit on that one by a guy named Albie Gloughton. And I was like, who the hell is this Albie Gloughton guy? I looked it up. He also wrote the hit song, Islands in the Stream.
Ooh, nice. Number one song on my birthday.
Albie Gloughton, Islands in the Stream.
Thank you for that, Albie.
Weird way to go out, but it's all right. On the whole, really did not care for the B-side outside of the core. A-side, obviously pretty strong. Like, if you just look at how well those songs did historically, pretty strong. Not my favorite album this week. Probably my least favorite album this week. Well, maybe. I don't want to get into it, but yeah. This or the Carly Simon, but I was just not in the mood for the Carly Simon. This genuinely, I was just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was insufferable. but...
Like, but, the man himself.
Yes, absolutely. But this week overall, like, it surprised me, turned me on to some different things that I was not expecting and have already revisited some.
I'm glad that Uriah Heep stood out to you, because I'm a fan of Uriah Heep. It was one of those bands, I know I talk about my you know, music experience growing up a lot, and my dad has a big influence on me. Uriah Heep's one of those bands that my dad was always like, yeah, when I was in high school... Like, Black Sabbath, Uriah Heep, Deep Purple, like, these are the bands I was listening to. I'm like, hell yeah, listen to some heavy music in high school. He said he used to put his speakers in a pyramid, leaning against each other, and then lay down with his head in between the two of them. They were just blasting at his head.
That's got to be good for you.
So I can see myself doing that in high school with a little Uriah Heep. So good on you, Dad. Way to go.
That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so... That's pretty much my final thought in the week. You got anything else to say?
Cool, man. No, I don't. Let's get into Didn't See That Coming. What do you got?
I got one for you. Let's go. All right, so this week we talked about London albums which were recorded in London for the most part. Got me thinking about this question. Pretty straightforward question this week for me. You could be at any time and in any place. What is one location's historic music scene you would like to have experienced firsthand?
Dude, this is nuts. You're in the same wheelhouse of what I was questioning, but I would probably choose there are two, and they're kind of neck and neck. Maybe like the early 60s that grew into mid 60s soul and Motown.
Ooh, yep.
The other would be kind of the rise of like Little Richard and those dudes who were like really kickstarting rock and roll in the 50s. But I freaking love Little Richard. I would have loved to have seen him in his prime. Those would probably be my neck and neck.
Nice, dude. Those are two really cool choices.
Yeah. How about you, man?
It's tough because I love so many different kinds and varieties of music. I think the Seattle grunge scene would be cool if I could away from getting hooked on like heroin. I think it would be cool to like hang out with those dudes. The LA thrash scene when Metallica was coming on the scene would be kind of cool to be a part of that. Like the Big Four starting to kick it off. I mean, those are a couple of the bigger ones for me.
Man.
All right. What do you got for me? What's your question?
Okay. So this is a little meandering, a little harder. Hold on. Sorry. I got a cough. Yeah.
Let me just say one more thing. Like this like mid to late 60s and then early 70s London, mostly 60s actually, like that would be cool. Like the Beatles and Pink Floyd's just getting started and Rolling Stones, like that'd be cool.
Oh, sure. And I mean, gosh, thinking for me, I'd love to see like the Manchester scene in the late 70s with Joy Division and Buzzcocks and those bands.
Yeah,
it's tough. Okay, so this is meandering, but we get there. So, Jay, 955 years ago, England fell to the Normans during the Battle of Hastings, leading to William the Conqueror being crowned king in December, I believe Christmas Day of 1066. This event changed the course of English, European, and world history. So, if you had to go back in time to witness one moment that would undoubtedly change the course of history, what would you choose, and which artist would be the soundtrack to that moment?
Change the course of history. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Man, now I'm just thinking about like the Bayeux Tapestry from the Battle of Hastings and stuff. Mm. You got me going down that route. All right, one thing out of history I'd like to see and then have it soundtracked. Let's see. That's tough because a lot of the things I'd be interested in seeing are actually things that would be really hard to watch. I know that's weird to say, but I would be interested in seeing, just because nobody knows what it was like the Battle of Cannae, where Hannibal and his group just surrounded a Roman army and killed every last person, just about. Like, that's awful. But to be able to see like how it all went down, because no one truly knows how some of those truly ancient things went down, would be kind of mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah, to see like a empire like really start crumbling.
Yeah, get mashed on by some people they viewed as like barbaric would be kind mm-hmm. of interesting. Like, but man, that's tough, dude. That is a really tough question. I think I would like to see the pyramids be built, and I would like to have Rush soundtrack it, because I think they would do something interesting with it.
That would be really fun, just because you get to see like all the stuff that's being snuck into the pyramids too.
Right. Another thing where nobody really knows exactly how it was done. So mm-hmm. it would be interesting to see how it truly was done. And then Rush would do it justice with some weird sci-fi shit, I'm sure. How about you? What do you got?
I was thinking like maybe just going back to Galileo's observations and scoring it with like Bowie, or maybe like the 2001 soundtrack.
I like that too. Big scientific discoveries would be cool to see for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I was my next thought was like Greek and like kind of the Peloponnesian Wars, Athens and Sparta, but I couldn't think of the right soundtrack.
I like to hang out with Tycho Brahe and just like do cool stuff. Have you ever looked up Tycho Brahe? Man, that guy was wild. He's getting drunk a lot. I think he had like a pet moose at one point. Like, but he was a genius. Man, look up Tycho Brahe. I'm telling you, he's an interesting character.
How you spell it?
Tycho Brahe.
Okay.
He's a Dane.
Yeah, the Danish astronomer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Polymath.
Imagine just like kicking it with a moose in the 16th century.
All those polymath guys that were just like geniuses about all kinds of things. It just blows my mind, dude.
Wow. I guess what else are you going to do back then? You might as well learn.
Yes, might as well just learn as much as you possibly could. That's all I got this week, brother. I think that was a good episode. I had fun this week.
Oh, for sure. So you all want to keep on having a laugh with the lads? Well, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, write a review and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, JanJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the link tree in our show notes. And as always, be good to each other and go get those cookies, Jay.
I'm pretty sure Tycho Brahe died because he was at a party and held his pee too long and like got an infection and died from it, if I remember right. But anyway.
Oh my God, that's going to make me worry now next time I'm on the road.
It's a good way to go out. Now, apparently it wasn't polite to get up and urinate at medieval parties, so he just held it and like end up killing him.
Oh no. Tycho.
Psycho, what are you doing? if I remember right. Anyway, see you, folks. Be good to each other. Don't hold your pee too long.